Hello, demigods! Welcome back to the Myths and Muses podcast from Plato Learning. I'm your host, Cass, daughter of Cleo, coming to you today after quite a summer vacay weekend. I'm just saying, if you've never been to a barbecue on Mount Helicon, it's quite an experience. The campfire songs and stories are exquisite, even if they do go on for a while. And trust me, you don't want to be around when all nine of the muses decide to hold a talent competition. But spending some time with my mother and aunts and handful of assorted cousins was perfect inspiration for this episode. Our topic today is siblings. The muses come from a large family even before you start getting into all of Zeus's other children. Fortunately, the nine sisters more or less get along, but that's definitely not true for all mythological siblings. You might be familiar with some epic sibling rivalries from modern media, like Mufasa and Scar in The Lion King, or the sisters of the family Madrigal in Encanto. The movies of the Marvel Comics universe even import some dysfunctional family dynamics out of Norse mythology, turning Thor, Loki, and Hela into siblings. That's not how they're related in the original myths, but it did give us some pretty sweet on-screen battles. One of the most famous stories about a sibling bond gone wrong is the tale of Romulus and Remus. And it's one of my mother's favorites, as she's reminding me. Probably because this story is a moment that changed history in a big way. These twins were born to Rhea Silvia and the god Mars. Rhea lived in a city in Italy called Alba Longa, and she was a descendant of Aeneas, a prince who escaped the fall of Troy. Rhea's wicked uncle, who had stolen the throne from her father, feared her sons would grow up to overthrow him, so he ordered them to be exposed in the wilderness. Yeah, that pretty much never works in mythology. The twins were first cared for by a she-wolf, then found and adopted by a shepherd. As they grew up, they showed leadership skills which drew others in their community to them. One day, they and their followers got involved in a dispute between followers of Rhea's uncle and her deposed father. Romulus escaped, but Remus was taken prisoner and brought to Alba Longa. Romulus rallied his supporters to free him, and in the ensuing battle, their great-uncle was killed, they were recognized, and their grandfather resumed his throne. The boys didn't want to live in his shadow, though, and so they set out to found their own city. Everything sounds great, right? Unfortunately, the siblings got into a squabble about where to found their own city. They knew the general area where they wanted to be, but they disagreed over which hill to start on. Romulus preferred the Palatine Hill, near the cave where their wolf mother had found them, while Remus preferred the Aventine, closer to the river. They decided to ask the gods for signs as to who was right. Each brother set up a tent on his preferred hill and watched the skies. Remus received a sign first, 6 birds flying over his hill. But then Romulus also saw a sign, 12 birds flying over his hill. This did not solve the argument. The priests they asked for advice couldn't even decide. Was it more important that Remus had seen his birds first, or that Romulus had seen more birds? Demigods, what do you think? With no clear answer to guide them, Romulus defiantly started building walls around his hill, and Remus mocked him by jumping over them. The conflict escalated into an all-out brawl between Remus's supporters and Romulus's followers. During this fight, Remus was killed. Some stories say by Romulus himself, although most stories say it was one of his followers that did it. Either way, Romulus was soon very sorry for his brother's death. Not so sorry that he didn't still found his city and name himself king and name it after him, which is why we have Rome. But sorry enough to institute a religious holiday in his dead brother's name. So, things ended pretty badly for half of that twin pair. Stories in other cultures also reflect the tragedy of brother turning on brother, like in the Arthurian tale of the knights Balin and Balin. Yes, Balin and Balin. Brothers who are destined to kill each other in battle, no matter how hard they try to avoid that fate. And there's Aunt Thalia texting me, saying that these stories are too much of a bummer, and I should remember that murderous rivalry isn't the only kind of sibling story in mythology. She's right! Take the example of the twins Castor and Pollux, renowned for their devotion to each other. These Spartan heroes, known as the Dioscuri, were sometimes both divine, sometimes both mortal, but in a lot of stories, only Pollux was divine. But he gave up his immortality so that he would never have to live without his brother, How sweet is that? Castor and Pollux participated in the hunting of the Caledonian boar and later joined the Argonauts. They had a bunch of other adventures, including cattle raids and rescuing Helen of Sparta from her first abduction by Theseus. When Castor was mortally wounded during one of those adventures, Zeus gave Pollux a choice. He could ascend to Mount Olympus, or he could give half his immortality to his mortal brother. Pollux chose the latter. And thereafter, the brothers split their time between Olympus and Hades. The Dioscuri became particularly revered by the Romans, maybe as a way of making up for that fratricide at the founding of their nation. I mean, that's awkward. And the story of the Dioscuri, even though they don't turn on each other, is still kind of a bummer. Sorry, Anthalia. Oh! There's Aunt Rainey. Urania, the muse of astronomy, with two reminders for us. First, she said to tell you all to look up in the sky for Castor and Pollux, as they're represented in the constellation Gemini. In the northern hemisphere, you can see Gemini best during the winter, northeast of the constellation Orion. I'll add some spotting tips in the show notes. She also wanted to remind me that some twin pairs aren't destructive or tragic. Instead, they're responsible for creating the universe. That's the case for Nut and Geb in Egyptian mythology, as well as Izanagi and Izanami in Japanese mythology. I'll post some stories about them in the show notes. Oh, something from Aunt Polly. Polyhymnia, muse of religious poetry, who wants me to share the importance of the Ibeji in Yoruba culture. And she sent some helpful notes. Wow, Aunt Polly has very tidy handwriting. Okay. In Yoruba culture and spirituality, there are twin orishas called the Ibeji. Through them, we can see the importance of twins carried down from divine or demigod status into everyday mortal life. Twins are believed to be magical and are granted protection by the orisha Shango. They are thought to bring great happiness and prosperity to a family. But in some traditions, if one of a human pair of twins dies in childhood, it's considered very bad luck to their family. Or it's simply very bad for the surviving twin whose soul will be imperiled. To prevent further misfortune, the parents will have a priest carve a wooden figure to represent the deceased twin, and the family takes care of the figure as if it were a real person. They dress it, give it jewelry, give it baths, and treat it with love and care. This statue is called an Ere Ibeji, after the Orisha twins. You can see some pictures in the show notes at mythsandmuses.podbean.com. Oh! There's Aunt T reminding me that it's time for our interview section, which this episode I'm calling Terpsichore's Choral Conference. No, that's still terrible. We're not calling it that. Anyway, today our guest is Sarah Ryan, a longtime veteran of Camp Half-Blood and Plato Learning. Welcome, Sarah. Please introduce yourself, your demigod background, and your history with Camp Half-Blood and Plato Learning.
Hi, I am Sarah Ryan. I am a daughter of Athena, but the way I found my way to camp is pretty unique in that I went on a run in the New Jersey woods at the South Mountain Reserve and was possessed by Baba Yaga, who is an Eastern European Slavic witch figure who runs around in a house on chicken feet and does lots of notorious, somewhat nefarious, chaotic, neutral sort of things, like possess a demigod. And as Baba Yaga, I, ran amok at camp for a couple weeks until the demigods all did a mass depossession ceremony and revealed myself, Sarah, waking up from a approximate 2-week blackout, at which they decided, they were like, you must be a demigod if you're susceptible to monster possession.
Makes
so,
sense.
So invited me to be a counselor to train at camp. And after that summer, I was summoned by Baba Yaga to go train with her in the magic arts, which I do from time to time. And it has since been made clear that I am a daughter of Athena. Yeah, I'm actually in New Jersey this summer helping clean out Baba Yaga's vacation house.
Oh, that's
quite a task, let me tell you.
That I bet you found some interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Careful what you poke, right? Like, careful what you stick your hands.
You need, magically protected gloves for just lots of, and potion spills are not.
Oh, less. Yeah, that seems hazardous. That seems like lots of hazardous materials all over the place.
Everywhere.
Well, Sarah, thanks for joining us today to talk about siblings. Tell me about the sibling dynamics in your life.
Oh man, I love siblings. Siblings are my favorite things. I only have one, sadly. I have one sibling, but he is one of my best friends. I have a little brother, but we are about less than 2 years apart, so very close in age. But I also have 18 cousins who are not siblings, but are not siblings either.
There's some similarity in the bonds, especially if you spend a lot of time together growing up.
Which we did. Yeah. So my brother and I were more akin to the types of kids who we would fake fight in the back seat of the car until our parents got mad at us and would turn around and go to yell at us and be like, "What are you talking about? We're not fighting at all." And then like act like little angels. Like that was sort of our rapport, our dynamic with our mortal parents.
Now, I understand you also have a camp twin.
I do have a camp twin. My camp twin is Jordana Elias. And as I have a bond with Baba Yaga, she has a bond with Strega Nona. Technically, we're cousins. And not many people know this, but Strega Nona and Baba Yaga are related. It's complicated. But so technically, we are cousins, not twins, but everyone calls us twins. Jordana tends to wear all black, has long black hair and these very intense brown eyes. And I have long blonde hair and green eyes. And together, we are opposite forces of chaos that come together and are a dynamic duo team that can do pretty much anything. We actually did not meet until we were both fighting monsters on the streets of Rome, and Jordana saved my life. First, technically, we have since saved each other's lives on many occasions, but she does get the first one. So,
and does she hold that over you?
Oh, absolutely. She acts like she was born 2 minutes before me when in fact she has been born 2 weeks after me. So, you know, and that is also why we are twins, because we were born 2 weeks apart.
Aw. So you have been a counselor. You spent a lot of time at all of our camps. How do you see sibling dynamics play out at camp? And are there some similarities there to divine siblings and stories we know from mythology?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Children of Athena cohere together and strategize as a unit immediately. Children of Ares are just often there are a lot of children of Ares actually in our Sparta hometown, and they are truly ready to just destroy whatever they meet and will happily destroy things together. Will sometimes destroy each other, but mostly it is external based. Children of Hephaestus, you can find a whole bunch of them at Forge during free time. And they will happily be building away, whether it's nymph houses or building shields. And there's just a bit of a, I would call it seeing themselves. Like they just see themselves, in other people really quickly. That gives them a little bit of a, it's like a moment, when they realize that they've got that sort of core similarity in common.
Yeah. And what do you think it means to have that kind of bond, that core similarity for our demigods at camp to find these demigod siblings through their divine parents?
You know, I mean, it feels like a little bit of a shortcut to finding your humans in life, you know? Coming to camp is one thing, and you make friends with, demigods of all godly parentage from across many pantheons. But when you find ones that also are your godly parent, there's just a unique sort of knowing and kinship that is immediately kind of seen in the other, and a little bit of ease around having similar energy wavelengths even. And maybe this is because I'm a daughter of Athena, but you can see the way that, especially when the hometowns, you know, the hometowns have all sorts of demigod parenting, you can see the way that they kind of fall into strategic rankings together, depending, you know, you've got like two children of Athena, a child of Ares, a child of Hephaestus, one of Freya, and it kind of all just like trickles together so that when we are out questing against monsters, you can really see the units pairing as they need to and shifting together to really get in there and figure out whatever it is we need to figure out at the moment.
Yeah. Sort of form your adventuring party, right?
Yes, form your adventuring party.
Yeah. I've always been very envious of it because there aren't as many Children of the Muses at camps, but I usually get to hang with the Children of Apollo and they're pretty cool. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
The There's musical. A similar like cousin type-ish bond there.
We had several instruments at camp today.
So, oh, yeah.
From our Children of Apollo. Yes. There was a violin and a kazoo and a harmonica.
Delightful. Delightful. Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us, Sarah. I
Absolutely.
Will send you back to Baba Yaga's vacation home now, and good luck with that.
Yep, it's going to take me at least 2 weeks. And hopefully I get it done before she gets here, because she won't be all too pleased if it does not.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to explain that to her. That's You want to make sure you get all the items on that to-do list checked off.
As I say to the kids, we're not exactly friends. We just have kind of an agreement, a very loose agreement.
An understanding.
An understanding, yes, that's what I was like, a very loose understanding that could go awry at any moment, really.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Cass.
I think people like telling stories about siblings because, for one thing, it's something lots of us have. And even only children may see sibling relationships reflected in their friends or cousins or between the siblings of their parents. It's pretty familiar territory in one way or another. Many cultures seem to find comfort in imagining the gods squabbling with their siblings, just like many of us do. Okay. Demigods, I want to know, which of the Olympian siblings do you think is the biggest bathroom hog? Or if they had to go to school in the morning, who do you think would be the last one to make it into the car or on the bus and keep everybody else waiting for them? And just kidding, everyone. Definitely not at all encouraging mortals to speculate on such things. Mom, please don't let Zeus fry me to a crisp. I'm just trying to keep the podcast engaging. Anyway. Oh, Aunt Yudi has just sent me a story to include. Thanks for the save, Euterpe. Here's a story from Japanese folklore called The Three Brothers and the Oni. A mother had three young boys, but she could no longer afford to feed them. She took them deep into the woods and told them to wait while she went to hunt for food. But the boys eventually realized that she wasn't coming back. The two younger boys began to cry, but the oldest brother began to plan. He suggested that they climb a tree and use its height to scout for a safe place to sleep for the night. When the boys climbed the tree, they saw a little house not too far away. Surely, they thought, whoever lived there would take pity on them, at least for one night. When they reached the house, an old woman answered the door. She warned the boys that they had come across the house of an Oni, a demon, her master, and that if they stayed in this house, he would surely eat them up once he returned. The boys pleaded with her for help anyway, and the woman agreed to hide them in the cellar. When the Oni returned home, he smelled the boys and started to search for them. But the old woman quickly told him that the boys had visited, but had gone away again, and if he was quick, he might find them in the forest. Now, the Oni had magical boots that let him run at great speed. He ran and ran and ran in search of the boys until he was so exhausted that he fell asleep in the middle of the forest. The three brothers, leaving his house, found him, and the oldest brother carefully stole the Oni's magical boots. Carrying one of his brothers under each arm, he ran back to his mother's house. And with those boots, his family was able to get enough food to keep them all healthy and safe. The story doesn't mention it, but I sure hope they helped that old woman escape the Oni too. Does that story sound familiar to any of you? It has some things in common with the German fairy tale of Hansel and Gretel. Those siblings didn't just steal from their would-be devourer, they cooked her in her own oven. Many of these stories have similar themes across many cultures. Maybe because, well, siblings are siblings no matter where they are. We see a lot of them in European fairy tales. Think about Cinderella and her stepsisters, Snow White and Rose Red. Or we can see examples in modern Disney movies like Lilo and Stitch or Frozen. Demigods, if you have siblings, do any of those fairy tales or modern movies remind you of them or of siblings of your friends? Another common trope is that of a family with three brothers where the youngest sibling eventually triumphs over his elders. I bet if you're a younger sibling yourself, you'd love some of those stories. Check out a few of them in the show notes. There are examples from Korea, Japan, Ukraine, Serbia, Germany, and the Iroquois Nation. We're reaching the end of the episode, and I feel like I'm just getting started. There are so many great sibling stories out there. I mean, think of the Pleiades, the seven sisters who became stars, or their equivalent in the Kiowa people of North America, where the stars were once seven little girls chased by bears who climbed a low rock. They begged the rock to save them from the bears, and it grew higher and higher until they were pushed up into the sky. The seven girls became the stars we know as the Pleiades, and the grooves that the bears tore into the rock trying to get to them became the Devil's Rock Tower Formation in Wyoming. Or there's the historical example of the Trung Sisters of Vietnam, or the mythological example of Inanna and Ishtar in Mesopotamia, or Frey and Freya in Norse mythology, or the rivalry of Osiris and Set, or how Agamemnon started the whole Trojan War because his brother's wife was abducted. Okay, yeah, there are so many sibling stories in mythology, legend, and folklore that I definitely don't have time to tell them all. How many can you think of? Do you have a favorite? Draw us a picture or write a poem and send it in through the form in the show notes, with Immortal Guardian's permission, of course. And we might feature it in a future episode. I will definitely have to figure out how I can work some of those other great sibling stories into the themes the Muses have planned for me. Next time, we'll be talking about games. Both the ones we see play out in mythology, and the ones you play that might have a mythological spin. Board, video, tabletop, all kinds. Until then, thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Myths and Muses is brought to you by Plato Learning. Since 2010, Plato Learning has remained steadfast in our quest to turn stories over to the imaginations of young people who infuse them with energy, power, and ingenuity, reminding us all how and why we fall in love with reading and storytelling. To learn more about our summer camps, Camp Half-Blood, Camp Jupiter, Daring Girls, and Camp Mythic, or about Mytho, our tabletop role-playing game, please visit plato-learning.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, stay brave, demigods.